The topic, as I say, is the 1959 Hebgen Lake earthquake. And Josephine Mayer, that day, August 17th, she was uneasy. She had a real funny feeling. It was Monday. As she and a few of her children were setting up camp in the Rock Creek Campground just north of Yellowstone Park, Josephine, her husband Mark, and their 8 kids had been looking forward to this outing for weeks. Mark Mayer had barely finished parking the family car before lighting out to fish the Madison River with some of his sons, leaving Josephine and the others to take in the sights and sounds of the beautiful Madison River Canyon while pitching the tent and planning supper. Problem was, there were no sights and sounds, at least not the kind that Josephine, a full-blooded little shell Chippewa, was accustomed to. There were no birds flying by or even singing, no signs of animals anywhere. The trees and the foliage were hauntingly still. Josephine immediately tracked down her husband and the other children, demanding they return to camp, pack up the car, and immediately head for Billings. Mark Mayer protested, but to no avail. Josephine also rejected the suggestion they drive north to Bozeman, perhaps to return to the campground the next day. Bozeman's too close, she said. We're going to Billings. Josephine won the argument, and so the family headed for Billings, the long ride no doubt punctuated by complaints of the ruined family vacation. You can just imagine the youngsters in the car going back. Mom, you better have a good reason for pulling the plug on our week down by Yellowstone Park. Well, the Mayers arrived in Billings late that night. And at 11:40 p.m., the Magic City swayed. Houses shook sharply as two tremors, 7 minutes apart, rolled through the region. Doors, furniture, anything not bolted down trembled. One tipsy bar patron, unnerved by the rattling, strolled out of a Billings tavern and yelled, "That's the last time I'll ever touch the stuff." At the same time, another man re-entered the bar with a different tone. "Quick, give me another one," he shouted to the bartender. There was minor damage in Billings and other Montana communities, leaving many to wonder the extent of damage closer to the quake's epicenter, wherever that was. As it turned out, Billings was 137 crow flight miles northeast of that epicenter. Here in Bozeman, 55 miles north of the epicenter, Glenn Welch, a trombonist in the 46th Army National Guard, was returning home from band practice at 11:45 p.m., driving his 1958 Buick west on Main Street. He first assumed the shaking and rattling was due to rough road. And he thought to himself, when is Bozeman going to do something about these streets? As he passed the Baxter Hotel, he saw panicked people in pajamas and nightgowns running into the street. And he jokingly wondered, what kind of party is this? But when a KBMN DJ interrupted the music on Glenn's radio by telling the audience, I don't know much about earthquakes, folks, but I'd say we just had a doozy, the reality sunk in. Bozeman resident Nick Nicholson remembers that night hearing a rumbling roar that woke him from his sleep. Lights came on in nearly every house as startled families waited for the rattling to end. That would take time as the jolts would continue into the next morning. Furniture and appliances were toppled in many homes, and some chimneys lost a few bricks. Concrete fell from the Holy Rosary Church steeple, creating a small hole in the roof, and minor damage was reported at the MSC campus, but the quake caused no serious injuries here in Bozeman. There were other panic-stricken hotel guests, those staying at the Old Faithful Inn in Yellowstone Park, 34 miles south of the epicenter. They, too, poured out of their rooms when the tremors, much stronger than those in Bozeman, began. Rocks fell from the huge fireplace chimney in the center lodge, and the quake broke the inn's water mains. Tremors shook the area throughout the night and into the next morning, leaving the already damaged fireplace 8 inches out of plumb. The inn was ordered evacuated, and the Yellowstone Park Transportation Company sent 8 buses to take guests to other accommodations. Some saved space on the buses by packing their cars and heading for the nearest exits, a difficult task considering the numerous rock slides and damages to bridges. The next day, the west entrance would be closed altogether. West Yellowstone, 17 miles south of the epicenter, the situation was grimmer. Laura Schauer of Los Angeles was leaving the Wagon Wheel Cafe when the first quake hit. She recalled that the lights swung, glass was flying everywhere. I picked myself up off the ground, several feet from the steps. Nearly every chimney in the town had crumbled. Glass storefronts were shattered. One resident claimed that with the first jolt, the paved streets resembled ocean waves. Another later said that walking on the shaking ground was analogous to walking on jelly. Leonard Kelly, operator of the Hitchin Post Motel, said the first jolts made him think a truck or car had struck the building. Then the walls groaned, rooms swayed, dishes fell out of cupboards, furniture bounced all around the main lobby. Kelly realized then it was an earthquake. Hotel guests at the Hitchin Post and other inns throughout West Yellowstone followed the lead of those at Old Faithful. They dressed, loaded their cars, and joined an ever-increasing caravan to Idaho Falls. They didn't check out, they just left, Kelly later told an Associated Press reporter. Many had paid for a night or two in advance, but nobody asked for refunds. The telephone connection to Bozeman was cut. Business in West Yellowstone came to a virtual standstill. There were several people injured, some of whom had to seek treatment in Ashton, Idaho. None, though, were serious injuries. These communities were by no means the extent of the quake's circumference. Tremors were felt as far west as Seattle, Washington, north in Banff, Alberta, east as far as Dickinson, North Dakota, and south all the way to Provo, Utah. The epicenter of what would forever be known as the Hebgen Lake earthquake turned out to be 44 degrees 50 north. I'm reading latitude and longitude here. 4450 north, 11101 west, okay? In the Gallatin Mountain Range and practically on the boundary of Gallatin County and Yellowstone National Park. 23.5 miles to the west lay the southern end of the Madison Mountain Range and a few miles further beyond the Gravelly Mountain Range. Like all ranges of the west, these mountains, with peaks as high as 11,000 feet, are, in geological terms, very young. They're still growing, and as they do, the ground rises, rocks shift, and occasionally faults emerge. On August 17, 1959, 3 faults running parallel to Hebgen Lake moved, displacing the earth in some spots by as much as 15 vertical feet. The Madison River, that runs from Yellowstone Park to the Missouri headwaters, flows on the south end of the Madison Range, and between the two is Highway 287, an important access route for tourists traveling to and from the park. Picturesque Hebgen Lake, created when the Madison was dammed by the Montana Power Company in 1913, resides to the southeast of the range, and then west of the dam, for 7 miles along 287, lies one of the more popular recreation areas for picnicking, camping, fishing, and hiking in southwest Montana. In 1959, it included 3 Forest Service campgrounds, the most popular being Rock Creek, almost right below a 7,600-foot-high mountain. Nearly 300 people were camped on that stretch the evening of August 17th. All but a handful had zipped their sleeping bags and tents or locked their camper doors by 11:30. including Roger Provost, his wife Elizabeth, and their two sons, 2-year-old David and 16-year-old Richard. Little did they know their campsite would be their eternal resting spot. A postcard sent by Roger the day before to relatives in their native California would be the last time anyone heard from him. Others were about to endure the longest night of their lives. It started at 11:37 p.m. when the seismograph at Regis College in Denver, Colorado was disabled by an earthquake centered near Hebgen Lake and registering 7.5 on the Richter scale. East of Hebgen Lake, where 287 meets Highway 191, the Duck Creek Y as we know it, Iris Yetter, co-operator of the Duck Creek Cabins, ran onto her front porch when the quake began, only to have it give way and fall into the basement. She managed to climb out, reach her car, and head north on 191, not stopping until she reached Bozeman. S.B. Gilstad and his family from Helena were parked about a half mile downstream from Hebgen Lake. They were awakened by a roar that sounded like the end of the world. "We were sleeping in the car," said Gilstad. "It felt as if 10 men were jumping on your bumper." Just below the Hebgen Dam, millions of tons of rock and debris from the 7,600-foot peak slid into the Madison River and along both banks, covering most of the Rock Creek campground. I was thrown clear across the river, and I was in the water a long while, recalled 39-year-old Irene Bennett of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, on a camping trip with her family. "When I came to, I was jammed against a tree with a log on my back. When the mountain crashed into the Madison, water from the river sent strong gusts of air up both banks, so strong they literally carried Irene's husband and one of her children away from the campground. The winds also tore all the clothes off Irene and several other campers." 10-year-old Royal Bennett, no relation to Irene, his mother, father, who suffered from polio, and 14-year-old sister Jeanette had camped within 50 feet of the mountain that was tumbling into the Madison. A family camped but a few feet from the Bennetts were buried by the slide. As water flooded their campsite, the Bennetts managed to climb up the mountain out of harm's way. Gerald McFarland, editor of the Salem, Oregon Capital Journal, was in a trailer with his wife 6 miles below Hebgen Dam when the quake hit. "It came without warning. We thought the trailer might tip over. Then we thought we were rolling into the Madison River, about 50 feet away. We couldn't get out. The shock lasted about 45 seconds. When we finally freed ourselves, we rounded up our party of six and found that all were uninjured. McFarland and the small group started walking upstream, hoping to find high ground. After traversing a half mile, they spotted a wall of water heading in their direction. We thought the dam had surely broken, and this was it. The water was just beginning to creep over the side road when we found higher ground. We later learned that the water escaped over the top of the dam like a tidal wave, forced out by the action of the quake. They also later learned the wall of water grew to a height of 20 feet. The aftershocks continued all night, each followed by more slides. Sometimes boulders the size of cars crashed around McFarland and his group, making a horrifying sound. At 2 a.m., they formed a rescue party to assist the injured. We went down into the valley, still not knowing when the dam might burst. We brought about 20 people out and made them as comfortable as we could. McFarland worried the mass of rubble and boulders would prevent their escape for days. The Reverend Elmer Ost of Queens, New York, his wife and four children, had camped adjacent to Rock Creek. With them was Melvin Fredericks of Elyria, Ohio, his wife and their three children. Jarred out of their sleep by the quake, Mrs. Ost ran for the car, hopped in, and grabbed the steering wheel. The wall of water unleashed from Hebgen Lake threw her against one side of the car. She managed to escape and reach higher ground. Her son Larry, trapped in the tent by the wall of mud, water, and debris, was able to tear his way through the canvas and also escape. Elmer Ost, alerted by Mel Frederick's cries for help, found him trying to free his 15-year-old son, Paul, from a stack of trees that had pinned him in the water. Together, Ost and Fredericks pried Paul loose just as the rising water reached his chin. They then moved to higher ground to rejoin their families, helping other campers to do the same. "We heard people crying for help and screaming," said Ost. "The front end of that mudslide just didn't give people a chance." Anton J. Schreiber of Billings and his family were camping at Rock Creek. After the landslide and wall of water destroyed their campsite, they managed to flee to higher ground. On a hillside, they listened helplessly to the screams of the injured and terrified people below. Schreiber's mother-in-law, Margaret Holmes, was severely injured, and through the night, the Schreibers tended as best they could to her wounds. Royal Bennett would also hear people scream and cry for help throughout the night, but there was nothing his family could do. At least 200 people and about 40 automobiles were trapped in the canyon, some critically injured and clinging to life. Cars and trailers were marooned in many places, cut off from escape by the slide. Most survivors felt the same as Gerald McFarlane, that it would be days before they could escape the mass of boulders and rubble. Others worried that because of the area's remoteness to begin with, how would the authorities even be notified? Fortunately for those trapped in the quake zone, a maintenance worker for the Montana Highway Department staying at a cabin near the Duck Creek Y hopped into his truck after the quake hit, drove 40 miles north to the Allmark Lodge, and placed a call to his supervisor. The word of the tragedy also filtered to the outside world via ham radio operators in West Yellowstone, Bozeman, and also in St. Anthony, Idaho. The slide that covered most of Rock Creek Campground also fanned westward into the Madison Valley, covering about 4,400 feet of riverbed and highway. It formed a barrier that stopped the flow of the Madison River, the result being the gradual creation of a new lake, one later aptly named Quake Lake. Hebgen Dam, though cracked, had held. But Hugh Potter, director of Montana Civil Defense Department in Helena, knew that should the dam fail, some 300,000 acre feet of water would be unleashed into the Madison. Evacuation orders were sent to Ennis, where emergency sirens blared 15 times to awaken residents with the order, "They wake you up in the middle of the GD night with the story that the dam's going to go," complained Ennis resident Ray Tuffy Coles. I think we know how he got his nickname of Tuffy. Still, the people packed up and got out in pretty good order. Many, still dressed in pajamas and nightgowns, drove over the hill to Virginia City. Others went just as far as the divide between the Tobacco Roots and the Gravelies. Potential flood warnings were issued as well to residents of Three Forks and Townsend. At daybreak, observers in search and rescue planes began to tell the toll of the quake. The 7,600-foot mountaintop where the slide had originated was gone, the rock and debris now in and along the Madison River. One pilot said the mountaintop looked like someone took a big scoop out of it. That scoop portion crashed to the valley floor with such intensity that it piled debris higher on the far shore than the rear one. Marble, quartzite, and other, some in boulders 20 feet in diameter, had tumbled down along with soils, vegetation, and trees. 80 million tons of rock had come down that mountain. The upper part of the slide, at the crest of the ridge between Rock Creek Campground and Sheep Creek, was 2,300 feet wide. Slide debris extended nearly a mile from the ridge northward across the Madison River, over the highway, and covered part of the Rock Creek Campground. Another pilot noticed what looked like smoke coming out of the Madison Valley. Upon closer investigation, the smoke turned out to be dust rising from still occurring landslides below. Marauding bears were easy to spot as they were feasting on food left in deserted camps. Governor J. Hugo Aronson was briefed on the situation early Tuesday by Hugh Potter. Governor Joe Hickey of Wyoming informed Aronson and Yellowstone Park Superintendent Lemuel A. Garrison that his state was ready to lend any assistance needed. The Gallatin County Sheriff's Posse joined Forest Service, Fish and Game personnel, smoke jumpers, Marine reservists, volunteer workers, and law enforcement officers in the search Tuesday morning for victims and survivors. One of the first to be found was Irene Bennett, crawling on her hands and knees, her face covered in blood, muttering, "God, my children, I wish I could find my children." Her 16-year-old son, Philip, was found nearby with a broken leg, but alive. Irene's 43-year-old husband and her other three children, ages 17, 11, and 6, were all dead, buried by the massive landslide. Just as heartbreaking that Tuesday morning was the discovery in the campground of Cliff Lake, southwest of the Madison River. Here, the Stryker family of San Mateo, California, husband, wife, and three children, had pitched two separate tents Monday night. 8-ton boulders released by the quake rolled into the campsite, bounced over a picnic table, and landed squarely on the tent housing Mr. and Mrs. Stryker, killing them instantly. The picnic table, a few feet away, was untouched, as was the tent where the children slept. The Red Cross sent blood plasma and antibiotics in on Tuesday. Most went to Bozeman Deaconess Hospital, some directly to the Duck Creek Y. A first aid station was established at West Yellowstone, and Dr. Richard Nolmeyer of Bozeman and two nurses, Barbara Ann Newt and Rita Gilbert, were flown by helicopter to the quake scene. They and three volunteers carrying two pillowcases of medicines would walk 5 miles from the Hedgen Lake Road to the dam to administer care and treatment. They would not leave until all the injured had been evacuated. Dr. Ray Bales of Bozeman, who also owned the Stagecoach Inn in West Yellowstone, chartered a plane and a pilot early Tuesday morning to fly in and check the structure and the well-being of his employees. After flying over the Madison and spotting groups of people huddled on the hills, the plane landed at West Yellowstone. The plaster walls of the Stagecoach Inn were cracked, but otherwise the damage was not serious. His workers were okay. Many huddled across the street around a bonfire. These employees helped Bales gather additional medicines. He and the pilot then flew back toward the site, landing in a huge field 1.5 miles from the dam. From there, Bales walked to the lake and found a volunteer who took him across the lake by motorboat. The ground was still quivering, In the area just along the highway end of the dam, all the more seriously injured were gathered. They were lying in station wagons, trailers, sleeping bags, and anything available. Fortunately for Bales, a Billings nurse, Ramona Green, had been camping in the area with her family. She was one of the uninjured, and she helped Dr. Bales administer first aid and painkillers to those who were injured, as did another nurse, Mrs. Fred Donegan of Ohio. After doing everything possible for the injured, I took the boat across the lake and had the pilot fly me back to Bozeman to help set up the air rescue of the injured. They couldn't be taken out by boat. They were too badly hurt to be transported that way, and no roads were open. It was a matter of getting them out by helicopter. The McFarland party, having returned to their campsite to gather food and medicines, watched the first rescue helicopter land and take out some of the injured, one of them being Schreiber's mother-in-law. Additional rescue helicopters arrived, and six more of the critically injured were airlifted to Belgrade by way of West Yellowstone and then rushed to Bozeman Deaconess. Waiting there were a full staff of doctors, nurses, and hospital personnel. Back at the quake scene, the McFarlands were met by Dr. Nomeyer and nurses Gilbert and Newt, who administered first aid and helped prepare additional evacuees. By the end of the day Tuesday, the confirmed death toll stood at 8, including 3 people crushed in their automobile. And Margaret Holmes, she died at Bozeman Deaconess. Nearly 300 people were rescued from the area, including a Boy Scout troop from Bozeman, all of whom were unhurt. Others, though, were still listed as missing, including Grace Miller, a widow in her 70s who lived alone in a cabin on Hebgen Lake. The cabin was found submerged in the water, with only its roof visible, but there was no trace of Mrs. Miller. She did survive, getting out of the house with her Malamute dog just before the cabin sank, and then walking in the dark to a nearby ranch. She later told a friend, quote, "I've been a pretty tough old bird, but I wouldn't want to go through that again." The Montana Highway Department quickly built a temporary road around the damaged highway section on the north side of Hebgen Lake, allowing those who still had workable cars and trucks to drive out. Gerald McFarland and his wife were among them. Cars went out first, then trailers brought up the rear. We had to be pulled out by bulldozer. Our last experience about 10 p.m. Tuesday as we were trying to get out was perhaps the most harrowing. We were given the wrong directions and drove our car and trailer into the rising waters of the Madison River, blocked by the main slide. The trailer was actually floating at one time, and we had to get out in waist-deep water and push it to higher ground. But we did finally get out about midnight. You think that guy ever asked for directions again? Probably never let his wife forget it, you know. And I'm never going to ask for directions again. By 12:30 a.m. Wednesday, 81 tired and shaken survivors had arrived in Bozeman, and more would trickle in throughout the day. Most were housed at Prior Hall up on the campus. Others were welcomed here into private homes. The Red Cross served food and refreshments to the survivors and, in some cases, provided clothing and pajamas. One of those housed at Prior was Harold Kruger, who managed to evacuate his family from the Rock Creek campground before the rock slide and floodwaters swept away their car and all of their possessions. Kruger said there were 5 cars in that area, one of them occupied when the quake hit. All were lost either under the rock slide or water. The occupied car, Harold Kruger saw, may have been that of Mr. and Mrs. Bernie Boynton of Billings. The couple had gone to Rock Creek for a weekend outing of camping and fishing. Family members and friends, holding out hope that the couple may have survived, came to Bozeman to interview survivors. One said he had seen Mr. Boynton in the slide area, while others were positive they had seen the Boynton's car and trailer in the Rock Creek campground. Records obtained at a Bozeman service station confirm the Boyntons had purchased gasoline before heading down the canyon. Beyond that, all clues vanished. The Boyntons were never found. Others had similar tales to that at Kruger. We saw the mountain falling with the most awful roar, Polly Weston of San Jose, California, told an interviewer. We could see trees flying in the air like toothpicks. Mr. and Mrs. Hal Weston and two nephews were trapped 24 hours by the mountain slide and flood. Mrs. Weston saw at least 10 trailers swept down the Madison River, but didn't know if any of them were occupied. One couple told of how they were rescued by David Thomas of Nye, Montana, who used a raft to free them from the tree they had clung to for several hours. Two men from Utah, who had fled to higher ground, said they had no trouble finding breakfast Tuesday morning, as countless fish were flopping on the newly exposed bank of Hebgen Lake. More injured were brought to Bozeman Deaconess, where a much-needed shipment of 60 pints of whole blood given by donors in Great Falls had just arrived from Malmstrom Air Force Base. Bozeman Chronicle reporter Annabelle Phillips went to Bozeman Deaconess on Tuesday, where she saw 14 injured victims admitted, including members of the Schreiber family. Shock, fear, utter disbelief showed in the eyes of some, she wrote. Many lay with their eyes closed. All were battered, bruised, and bloody. People, young and old, appeared like magic to offer their services in any way. Blood donors quietly arrived. Exhausted nurses and teams of doctors worked on caring for the injured. A small girl was brought in, her head bandaged. The next stretcher bore her injured father. She was probably unaware that the first patient received was her fatally injured grandmother. At noon, 42-year-old Mrs. Ray Painter of Ogden, Utah, died at the hospital, the second quake victim to expire in Bozeman. This brought to 9 the number of known dead. So far, 29 people had been treated at hospitals in Bozeman, Butte, and Ennis. On Wednesday, Highway Department crews finished emergency repairs that allowed U.S. 20 and 191 to reopen. They were closed on Tuesday to emergency travel only. All Yellowstone Park entrances would also reopen Wednesday, except the one at West Yellowstone. The American Red Cross headquarters here in Bozeman was inundated all day long with calls from anxious friends and relatives of those who were still missing in the quake area. A Bozeman service organization known as the Gray Ladies, led by Mrs. Herman Larkine, worked on inquiries. The Red Cross would also have to find temporary lodging for an additional 80 survivors who would arrive in Bozeman on the 20th. Down in West Yellowstone, telephones were still knocked out. A reporter said the road leading from West Yellowstone to Hebgen Lake resembled shredded wheat until the highway department finished its work on Wednesday. The west entrance was closed and would remain so for almost 2 more weeks. The historic Union Pacific Depot was closed and daily train arrivals canceled. In 1959, West Yellowstone and the surrounding tourist area could accommodate some 8,000 guests. There were a few vacancies Monday evening, but within 24 hours, there were close to 7,000. About the only bright spot was at the airport, where sightseers willing to pay a pilot and charter a plane to view the quake area made for a land office business. By Thursday, there would be 15 private planes available to meet the demand, whereas on an average summer day, there were 3 to 10. Opportunists, I guess, at the West Yellowstone Airport. Tourist promoters from Yellowstone and nearby communities assured potential tourists the area was safe to visit. "We don't want any monetary aid or charity," said one. "We just want people." By Thursday, Yellowstone Park employees were back on the job despite minor tremors that were still triggering small landslides. Old Faithful continued to spout, uninterrupted by the tremors. The owners of a Canyon Village restaurant added a new item to the menu, the Quake Special, a tossed salad and hamburger steak. 16,000 visitors, a good attendance under the circumstances, entered the park on Wednesday, but by mid-September, the overall rate of park visitors, when compared to 1958, had fallen by half. Royal Bennett's family received treatment here in Bozeman, and when they were ready to return to their home in Flagstaff, Arizona, the local Hertz Rent-A-Car gave them a rental at no charge. Some injured would remain hospitalized for days. The last of those injured in the Hebgen Lake quake, 59-year-old Clarence Scott of Fresno, California, was released on September 9th. On Thursday, August 27th, a memorial service was held just outside the mouth of the Madison Canyon for the quake victims. But even then, the exact number of missing was uncertain. Initial estimates ranged from 40 to 100. For days, volunteers would comb the rock slide area looking for clues. Postcards to relatives, service station, and retail store receipts helped to put the pieces together. If a vacationer did not return home when originally planned, that would most likely put their name on the list of the entombed along the Madison River. Such was the case of Robert and Corey Williams' family of Idaho Falls. They and their three small children registered as guests at the Virginia City Museum on August 17th, but were never heard from again. It was the worst quake in Montana's history. The final tally from the disaster showed 28 people killed by the quake, 19 of whom were buried under the slide. Monetarily, the quake caused $11 million in damages to highways and the timber industry. Reminders would linger for those living near the quake site. As late as the third week in October, tremors were still felt here in Bozeman. In early September, the Madison River resumed its flow, albeit a trickle, as water finally ebbed over the naturally made rock slide dam. Army engineers and private contractors had worked tirelessly since a few days after the quake to bulldoze a 250-foot-wide spillway across the top of the slide before Quake Lake overflowed, and their hard work paid off. To ease the effects of erosion on the downstream face of the slide, they decided to also cut a 50-foot-deep channel across the top of the slide. It was finished October 29th. Hebgen Lake and Quake Lake remain today, and the Madison flows freely to the Missouri headwaters. Now, we started out this discussion with Josephine and Mark Mayer. In 1996, Emily Mayer, the granddaughter of Mark and Josephine, she visited Quake Lake. It was her first visit, and it didn't last long. She, too, had a funny feeling and left. Months later, she heard for the first time the story of August 17, 1959, from her mother. In Emily's mind, that explained her reaction. "I have not been back since," she wrote. No one in the family ever speaks about that day, and as far as I know, no one has ever been back. I guess when your brush with death is that close, you don't want to talk about it. And as for her grandfather, Mark, he never doubted Josephine's instincts again.